Hey there, everybody. This is Tom Salemi of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. Welcome back. Great to have you. We've got an interview I did with Todd Powell. He is the CEO of Reflection. Reflection is a cool technology called Syntex that is basically able to pinpoint radiotherapy so it kills cancer more effectively. Todd tells a great story. I won't take any more of your time. Let him do that job because he does it so well. But we don't talk a lot about oncology and cancer here on the podcast. That's not really by design. It's just kind of how things work out. But this is an area where I'd like to spend a little more time. And I suspect there's other things we should be focusing on as well. So I'm reaching out to you right now. If you could just shoot me an email, tsalemi, T-S-A-L-E-M-I, at WTWHmedia. That's WTWHmedia.com. I'd love to hear what you're, what we're not doing or what we could be doing better. Or if you want to tell us what we're doing well, that's always nice too. But Managing Editor Kayleen Brown and I will be on the podcast probably next week or maybe the week after, giving a state of Device Talks, talking about some of the new projects we're working on. We're always looking for new things to create. We love to create. So I don't usually put out a direct plea or ask to folks, but I should, and I am, and that's what this is. So shoot me an email there, or more easily just connect with me on LinkedIn, or you connect with Kayleen Brown as well. Let us know, again, what we're doing well, what we could be doing better, what projects we could be working on. I mean, I know there's obvious ones. We could be doing an event in Minnesota to complement the one that we're doing at Device Talks, both West and Boston. And Device Talks West is happening on October 16th and 17th at the Santa Clara Convention Center. So don't forget to register for that. And we will be back in Boston next spring. We used to have a Minnesota program, just never really found its footing post-COVID, which is a couple of years now. So it's not a great excuse, but it's... It's been a challenge to do all the things we're doing and to do that as well. But I want to find a way to do that. I want to find a way to create a new podcast. I want to find a way to create cool digital presentations like the one Steve Bell did last week on Device Talks Tuesdays on the state of robotics. We'll be doing some more themed podcast series in the fall. In September, we'll be focusing on connected health. We'll begin marketing that one as well. It's going to be similar to the surgical robotics one we did in March. I wouldn't be surprised if we did another surgical robotics one before the end of the year, but there's other things we could be doing. So thank you for everything you contribute to Device Talks by listening, participating, attending. We are truly and amazingly grateful for your support, and we want to do better though. So again, reach out to me on LinkedIn, reach out to Kayleen Brown on LinkedIn. If you want to shoot me an email directly, T-S-A-L-E-M-I at WTWHmedia.com. Would love to have your feedback. So without any further delay, actually, I do want to remind you that Device Talks Tuesday is happening at 4 p.m. Our friends from Flex will be presenting. So go to DeviceTalks.com for more information and to register for that. As always, it'll be free. You can watch it live. You can watch it on demand. And would love to have you there. Our Device Talks Tuesdays crowd is special. They bring great questions. It's always a fascinating conversation. No matter the topic, folks just bring their A game. And I'm really grateful for that as well. So make sure you join us there. We will be rolling out some more podcasts in the near future. Of course, we'll be back next week with the Device Talks Weekly. But and if we this week, Kayleen Brown released a new episode of Device Talks AI featuring Hologic, and that was exceptional, both from our guests' contribution, but Kayleen's as well. She brings so much to a story, and really happy to have her as part of the Device Talks platform. So we can do a lot. We got game, we got a deep bench, and would love to get some direction from you. So once again, connect with me on LinkedIn, connect with Kayleen on LinkedIn. And of course, if you have some news to share, connect with Chris Newmarker on LinkedIn. All right, that's enough of me. Let's get this podcast started. All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
Woo-hoo! Todd Powell, welcome to the podcast.
It's really nice to be here, and thanks, Tom.
I'm excited to learn about reflection and the oncology and cancer device space just seems to be really exploding, and that's great because we obviously need important tools like yours to help folks who have dreadful diseases. But before we get into that really fantastic story, I want to learn about your story and your path into medtech. What drew you to medical devices initially?
Yeah, no, and thanks again, Tom. It's really nice to be here with you today. It's interesting. I think I always imagined I would not be in a medical device space. But I suppose there was sort of no getting out of it. I kind of grew up around a medical device field. My dad worked at Varian for 33 years.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And, so I sort of grew up around dinner table conversations related to cancer care and medical devices and, you know, big 10,000 plus pound machines that, delivered radiation therapy. And those were sort of the dinner table conversations. And I got to meet a lot of the leadership through those sort of formative teenage years, senior leadership and engineers at Varian. And that had a huge effect on me. And I think that I started out my career wanting to be either a physicist or a software engineer or a marketeer. And so I was basically wildly confused and wasn't really sure how any of that was going to work out. But started out as a software engineer, really loved that, was working at Varian, had the opportunity to leave there with a few super talented guys that started a company called Impact Medical Systems. And that company was a software company in cancer care, really dedicated to the entire experience of cancer patients from diagnosis through lifelong follow-up. And as odd as it sounds, back then, this was sort of late 80s, early 90s, nobody was doing that. Nobody had information management systems for healthcare. Nobody had specifically information management systems for cancer care, which just seems unimaginable now because we all appreciate just how complex cancer is. It's not one disease, it's hundreds. The amount of information that needs to flow with a cancer patient is vast and complex and varies by indication. And so, it's a tremendous amount of data. Patients tend to be patients forever. They hopefully get cured, but they get followed up and they come back sometimes all too often. And so that information flow is super complicated. And so I started out my career as a software engineer in that space and just loved it and really learned the field. And then that company was acquired by Elekta, and I had opportunities to run different parts of Elekta all around the world and, became closer and closer with the device side of cancer care through that company, being one of the other largest companies that makes medical linear accelerators for radiation therapy. And it was sort of in the early 2010s or so that I met the founder of this company, Reflection, and that's Dr. Sam Mazin with his co-founder, Akshay. And I started to learn what those guys were doing, and I realized that it was at the center of the knot that keeps radiation therapy from doing what we all believe it should do. But I suppose that's more of what we'll get into today.
Yeah, no, I want to learn more about the company, just a bit about yourself. So were you in the Bay Area the whole time?
And you
steered clear of the .com sort of lure during the 90s?
Well, I don't know. I think actually we had the .com lure ourselves, as a software company we were able to ride a wave of demand in software because of the absence of that information management system technology and the informatics that flow along with it, all through that, the 90s and then the .com era. And so I know I very much feel I was caught up in all of that and the Y2K problems that went along with it. all that drama, in the late 90s and early 2000s, but even then it had very much a healthcare and cancer care specific focus.
Sure. So what's interesting is lots of things, but I ask people how they get into medtech and how they've stayed and why they've stayed in medtech. You've remained in a very particular field within healthcare, cancer treatment. Is that the kind of community that once you join, you sort of stay in it? Is it a unique sort of subset of the larger med tech community, or is it just something I can't say I have a large enough sample size to say that once you're in cancer care, you stay in there, but that's what you've done. Why have you stayed in there? And is there sort of a niche that you, I don't know, that you don't want to leave?
Yeah. I mean, I've thought about this a lot myself, as you kind of look back on your career, once you sort of hit a certain point of age, I guess.
Sure.
And I think there is something to that. You know, I think like a lot of the people I talk to, that are in healthcare generally, and then cancer care specifically, I think it's tantalizing and irresistible to want to work around people that have dedicated their lives to dealing with the most, arguably the most insidious disease mm-hmm. on the planet, you know, and we've all got a cancer story, every one of us, right? And
yep.
We all have too many of those cancer stories, and we start acquiring them usually as kids, and the stories kind of change their arc over the course of our lives. And you know, they tend to kind of get worse when you get older, right?
Yep.
And that's sort of the nature of the disease. And I think that, you know, I've had the pleasure of working with so many people that are just so smart and work so hard, so tirelessly for cancer patients. You know, once in a while, you think about working on something else, but it's just tough to move away from it because it's sort of like, well, what other thing am I going to go work on that might have a bigger impact on a larger number of patients than cancer?
Yeah.
And, you know, I've had the honor of, you know, in earlier in my career, writing software that treated 125,000 patients a day.
Wow.
And around the world, you know, and it's like, that's, you know, a pretty good feeling, you know, pretty good way to wake up and kind of start the day. And I think I've, you know, like all my colleagues, not just at this company, but throughout the entire field, both on the technology side that I'm on and the clinical side that all of our partners are on. And I think that's unquestionably a motivation for us all. There's no doubt.
Interesting. And I'm sure there are others that have this as well, but the outcomes are so binary. You know, I think either someone has been treated or they have not, whatever the lasting outcomes of that are. But there's, I don't think there's another specialty or few, there are a few other specialties, I think, where your impact can be seen so clearly.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think there's a real community among cancer patients as well. You know, I mean, cancer patients for a lot of valid reasons really come together and support each other. And you just feel that, right? You feel it the minute you walk into a great cancer center, and there are a lot of them, right? When you walk in, you feel it's a community and everything about a community, supporting each other. And you know, there are heroes, but it's the community and it takes a village kind of sense that you just feel, and it's intoxicating, and people want to be a part of it, I think, you know? And yeah, there's no doubt about that.
Absolutely. Oh, and then for the patients as well, I think the moment before and after is so binary, where you get that diagnosis, your life is never going to be the same. No matter what happens, it's never going to be the same. You've got
You're affected no matter what, right?
Yeah.
And obviously, we're trying to make that effect better and better, and it is getting better and better at all stages of disease. And
yeah.
You know that there's plenty of work to do.
All right. Well, let's talk a bit about reflection. What was it that? Let's talk about the company itself. Can you give us a little bit of backstory as to its origins, of its technology, and its creation?
Yeah, for sure. And so the company was again founded. Sam Mazin really came up with the idea. He was a postdoc at Stanford at the time, and you know, electrical engineering, imaging scientists, you know, essentially knew everything there was to know about MR, CT, and PET guided imagery.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it occurred to Sam at one point, and it was really just through a chance lecture that he attended in radiation oncology. He wasn't a specialist in radiation oncology at all, or radiation therapy generally. He went to a lecture and realized, as all of us do that have been in the field, that the real challenge of radiation therapy isn't related to its effectiveness. And radiation therapy is, interestingly enough, a lot of people are surprised to realize it's been used for 100 years, clinically, literally 100 years. And it's incredibly effective, right? And we understand, because it's been used for so long and so well, we understand its toxicity and efficacy profile really, really well, right? We know what radiation does when we can get it where it needs to go. We know what different healthy surrounding tissues can tolerate and not tolerate, meaning we understand that toxicity. We can walk those lines very, very carefully and effectively. The challenge is getting it where it needs to go because it's a non-invasive therapy and it's done from outside the body using the images taken from outside the body. And along with the benefits of that non-invasive approach is a degree of uncertainty, right? Because you're, you know, all of our bodies, some more than others, are a little squishy and things move. And so there's just an inescapable uncertainty about where things are. And that's compounded by organ settling, respiratory motion, you know, just everything else that's happening in your body that results in the motion of organs and the cancerous targets that we're trying to treat. And so it occurred to Sam going to this lecture, being a PET imaging expert, that, well, wouldn't it be interesting if you could just inject a radio tracer, right? Where when you inject that radio tracer, it accumulates in the cancer. And if you wait long enough for that accumulation and the signals that come from that PET tracer outward and are collected to form a PET scan, an image, wouldn't it be interesting if instead of waiting for that image to form, you could just shoot right back? You know, so you could collect an emission that naturally happens from that PET tracer and just shoot right back, which by definition means you've targeted the cancer because that's the origin of that emission from the positron itself. And that is in fact where the name reflection comes from, because we reflect that therapeutic radiation right back. And so Sam came up with this idea and started a company on it in 2009 and spent the next 5 years hearing no a lot, right? Because it was a lot, a number of reasons. You can imagine going out and trying to raise, you know, $10 or $12 million in 2009, probably not an easy time to do, right? I mean, you know, the world was just trying to pay off all sorts of challenging things at that point in time. So Sam and his co-founder spent 5 years unsuccessfully raising capital to build a very expensive prototype just to see if the concept would even work. But they ultimately found that. And interestingly enough, that institutional capital was potentiated in, you know, really came from two groups, Pfizer and Sofinnova Ventures, Sofinnova Partners, excuse me. And, you know, that's interesting that it was the pharmaceutical industry in many ways that potentiated that interest, right? And so, because I think even then they saw the potential that if you could turn the cancer into its own beacon and make a machine sensitive to that cancer, you would potentially unlock indications, despite that 100 years of great progress with radiation therapy, that are presently beyond its reach. And that was the original value proposition of the company, and it's remained the guiding light of the company in the decades since.
Oh, I mean, that's cancer is clearly one of those areas where the pharma industry is still very much looking for device therapeutics. I mean, Sofinnova Partners, I mean, obviously one of the most well-regarded venture firms out there. It's interesting to me that you'd go through 3 or 4 or 5 years of no's and then finally get a yes from Sofinnova Partners. I know you weren't directly involved in that, but do you know what transpired over that time to get those no's to a yes from the premier firm that you probably would have gone to first anyway? Was there some development of the technology that helped it?
Yeah. You know what happens there, Tom, fundamentally, it wasn't about converting no's to yeses. It's about finding the right yes. Okay. I think as you just suggested, right. It's about pairing up with that visionary set of investors that want to swing for the fences on the biggest killer on the planet, you know, and do it with at the high stakes table. And, you know, that's not every investor, and that's okay. Right. You know, I think it's especially at that point in time, you know, you could absolutely understand why plenty of investors would look at a $12 million yes. prototype, yes. right? So not a product, a prototype, right? So let's spend $12 million to turn over one card that's got maybe a 20% chance of having a green light on it after you turn it over, right? That's a big ask, right? Yeah. You know, sure. got a lot of, hey, Sam, that sounds like a great idea, but what else you got, right? Yeah. I mean, he got a lot of those. And, but, you know, he ultimately was connected in large part through the support of our chairman, Jay Watkins, who is a visionary leader and, yep. and I'm chairman to this day and a huge supporter of me and the entire team, you know, to really get us in front of the right capital that had the right vision to support something that big. And thankfully, the prototype worked and allowed the company to start raising, you know, institutional capital in 2014 thereafter. And we just had an amazing run of incredible investors, you know, in Johnson & Johnson, TPG, KCK, Ally Bridge, T. Rowe Price. I mean, the list goes on and on. And I'm not naming half of them, I'm sure. You know, and it's been an amazing journey that's been backed by people that believe that just because radiation therapy has done an amazing job in early stage cancer, where it is essentially entirely used and exclusively used with 5-year survival rates of north of 90%, 95%, depending on the indication, but pointing it at that cohort of patients that are presently beyond the reach of radiation therapy, which is a huge group of people, right? I mean, 60% of the people that are diagnosed every year with cancer do not receive radiation therapy or any early stage local therapy. And the real fundamental opportunity with this company and those early investors that we just talked about all saw this, right? Is that if you can take something that is incredibly cost effective, incredibly efficacious, very well understood, very well tolerated toxicity profile, but used in early stage cancer and pointed at the late stage cancer patient, you will provide those late stage patients opportunities that are presently beyond their reach.
Wow.
And that's not to mean in any way that that's exclusive of systemic therapies, which is what they all get, right? So late stage patients get systemic therapies, i.e. drugs and other targeted therapies like that. You know, so it's not to say that they won't still need those, right? You can debulk the body of the gross disease through a technology like ours. The thesis is that those systemic therapies will do better because they can mop up the microscopic disease that is unquestionably everywhere in the body at that point in time. And that's the fundamental value proposition of why the pharma industry have backed this company is because it's not to replace their systemic therapies, right? It's to make their systemic therapies more efficacious in a late stage cancer setting.
I want to break that down a bit more, but I'm still fascinated by the startup story. You meant Venrock. I don't know if you said Venrock, but Venrock's not.
I did
investment.
Say Venrock. Did yeah, no.
But it just yeah. strike. It's like you can understand why entrepreneurs just work so hard at what they do, because there's going to be a moment that they envision the moment when they get that first yes, and it just 3 or 4 years later, you've got yeses from all of these big name firms that. Maybe 4 or 5 years ago wouldn't have given you the time before. So you just need that one yes to kind of get the ball rolling. It's remarkable.
It helps. Yeah, yeah. It definitely helps. Right. I mean, momentum is your friend when raising capital. There's no question of that. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So help me again understand where your system is. Is it Syntex? How am I saying? Isn't it?
Yeah. You said it perfectly. Thank you. And Syntex comes from the word scintillation, right? So because when you inject a PET tracer, you could think of that scintillation process where the cancer itself starts to emit a signal that the machine can detect. But that's right, Tom.
So where is this? Who is it? What type of cancer patients can this be used on? At what stage? And just help me understand the whole process versus late versus early. I didn't realize that I thought everyone would get chemotherapy. I don't know when that's introduced, but help me just understand the therapeutic landscape a bit and where.
Yeah, let's take a step back and talk a little bit about that. And these are broad brushstrokes, but yeah, I think you'll see where I'm going with this. So when cancer presents, generally speaking, it is either still a local disease, i.e., has not spread, you know, one or perhaps two masses close together, or has begun to spread potentially through the lymphatic system, through lymph nodes, or elsewhere, right? And so it is broken off and gone through the, you know, vasculature of the body and started to, you know, appear somewhere else, right? And so we would call that metastatic cancer. And radiation therapy, like surgery, it's a local therapy, meaning I go in and I attack it at the point where I can actually see the disease, right? And so, you know, surgery is obviously invasive. Radiation therapy is non-invasive. And so it is directed by images taken from outside the body to do it the best job of approximating where the cancer is and then to ablate it with a therapeutic beam of radiation. You could think of it like an artillery gun that goes in and destroys that spot of cancer. But once cancer is spread, and this is really just a pattern that has existed for decades, once we get to stage four cancer, we stop using local therapies. And the presumption is that once cancer has spread to multiple sites of disease, there is no clinical benefit to reducing the local spots because it's just going to continue to spread elsewhere. Okay, so that's sort of the fundamental approach to cancer care that's been out there for decades. And I'm not a clinician, but that's essentially and at a high level the way that is done. And that dogma and practice is breaking down. And it's breaking down very quickly through the production of very robust evidence that shows that if we can debulk the patient of the gross volume of disease, meaning the lumpy disease, if we can reduce that, even though the cancer is already spread, those systemic therapies that are going after the cancer that is everywhere in the body will do a better job because they can get in front of the numbers game of cancer, right? And you can almost think of it like good guys versus bad guys. And if I can beat back the number of bad guys, the good guys have a chance to get ahead of the game. And that was a thesis maybe 8 to 10 years ago. And it has been now proven through approaching 10 randomized controlled trials with numerous patients, really high quality data that shows that if we can just push current technology as far as it can go to reduce that bulky disease, the systemic therapies do wildly better. And by wildly better, I mean, cancer progress in these types of studies is typically defined by progression-free survival or overall survival. And these patients will have a two-year improvement in overall survival in certain indications, 2 years. The average increase in overall survival for a targeted therapy, a drug cleared by the FDA is 4 months.
Oh, wow.
So, we're talking about a dramatic increase in the benefits to the patient, right? And this is using just good old radiation therapy, but getting it where it needs to go. And so that if you accept that thesis, then the next logical step is, well, then let's get radiation to more spots of local disease and knock back more of that gross tumor volume. And that's the fundamental opportunity that we believe we have with reflection, because instead of using images from the outside of the body to approximate where the cancer is and to bring along with it a certain amount of imprecision and uncertainty, let's light up the cancer itself and make a machine that is sensitive to that and can follow the cancer regardless of how it moves, right? Because when you inject a PET tracer, of course, you don't just light up one tumor, you light up all the tumors. And so if we can light up the cancer itself and then move the patient through our machine, we have the opportunity to hit and debulk that disease more wildly, right? And to hit the gross volume of disease so that those systemic therapies have a better chance of moving forward.
So Syntex offers the opportunity to highlight the areas that need to be treated with the radiation, and you also have a system in which the radiation is delivered. How is that different?
All in one. That's
all
right.
In one. So you're basically putting someone in at the same time, or are you kind of going through and?
That's right. And so we're cleared right now through a study that we did with the FDA, a clinical study for cancer in the lung and bone. Right. And so if you think of all the metastatic disease, cancer in the lung and bone represents about 2/3 of the metastatic patient population. So it's a great start. We're not stopping there. And in fact, we're already starting to gather the evidence for additional indications and additional PET tracers, because there are a multitude of PET tracers out there that light up different indications in different ways. And our machine has the technical capability to use all of those. So we have a number of tracers and indications that we're going after next. But yeah, that is the idea.
So is your method of delivering radiation, is it different? Is it more focused? How are you able to deliver so many therapies and not, I mean, I imagine there's some risk to delivering too much radiation. How do you safeguard against that?
Yeah. So there are a number of different things going on there, right? So, and again, if you go back to the way radiation therapy is delivered today, and with where it's done from images taken from outside of the body that has a certain amount of imprecision and uncertainty that comes along with it. Generally speaking, that uncertainty is managed through other machines and other technologies. by creating a larger space around the target to accommodate that uncertainty. Okay, so a larger volume to accommodate a motion envelope. And you could maybe think of it as an actor walking on a stage. And if you had a difficulty keeping a spotlight on that actor, well, then you just light a bigger area of the stage to ensure that you kept the actor illuminated as they walked around on the stage. But what our technology does differently is it autonomously and without any human intervention can shrink that spotlight onto the actor themselves, as so that as they walk around, even if they ran around, the spotlight will continuously stay on them with no knowledge a priori about how they may or may not move. So it's just an entirely different approach. And what we've seen so far, even in our first cases, that we are able to reduce the target volume by 20 to 30%, but still deliver the same amount of therapeutic radiation. And so what does that mean? Well, that means you're irradiating 20 to 30% less healthy tissue. And now imagine that not just with one tumor in the lung, but imagine it with four tumors in the lung, you know, and lung cancer patients need those, need that extra lung capacity. And so you can reduce toxicity and side effects if you can decrease the amount of healthy tissue irradiated.
And you're able to better target the radiation because of the signal that's being sent by the, tracer?
It's a continuous locked on signal because the machine in the machine itself is the capability to detect those emissions from the PET tracer in real time and to shoot back without any, you know, to do so autonomously. You can think of it like the difference between a self-driving car and a car that's not self-driving, right? So it autonomously locks onto the cancer itself using a signal that is continuously emitting from all of the cancer where the PET tracer has been taken up and is locked onto that continuously through the therapy process. So yeah, we had to invent all of that technology, bring it all together in a single platform so that it can do that continuously in a single session.
This is Tom Salami of Device Talks. We're excited to bring you another great program for Device Talks West here at the Santa Clara Convention Center, talking new business models, new missions, and new intentions. I can't wait until we fill this auditorium with MedTech's best engineers, entrepreneurs, and executives. This is Device Talks West.
The foundation of connected care is the who we are that drives the what we do. We shape our environment, and then our environment shapes us.
Thoughtful discussions of how it impacts not only markets, but society and the workforce.
What is it doing for the patient? And that's what our technology needs to be.
I look at what the standard of care is today. Are there areas where we can improve upon the standard of care, or are there areas where there are significant gaps? And that's what drives me.
What am I trying to accomplish? You know, getting back to that core, what problem am I trying to solve? Am I going to do something new and really move the needle for patient outcomes? So there's a ton of work to be done, and that's what keeps me excited.
Why did you choose MedTech? Find out at Device Talks West on October 16th and 17th. Register at west.devicetalks.com.
The folks that are saving lives, they're all here.
Let's talk a bit about the business side of things and logistics. So I'm looking at a picture on the Reflections website about, I imagine it's a Syntex system. Is it a system? Were you saying it's a system? I mean, you've got
you can think of it as a system for sure. Yeah,
it looks like a kind of a larger MRI machine with the tube going through and all that. Where does that fit in
a hospital?
That's
right. You could think it would look like, and if you walk past it, you might think that it was an MR or perhaps a PET CT,
yep.
or even a diagnostic CT. It's a relatively small ring-based system, fits into the types of rooms. These are often called bunkers because of their large, thick, and shielded walls. There are about 4,000 of those bunkers in the United States right now, mm-hmm. and we haven't found one yet that it wouldn't fit into. It's a relatively small machine and kind of fits right into the existing infrastructure of a cancer therapy department.
Are you replacing something else that's currently on the floor of those bunkers, or are you?
It's both. Yeah. We're replacing and adding new ones. You know, cause what happens again?
Is there currently a predecessor therapeutic system that's not yours that you're convincing hospitals like, look, you need to get that out of the bunker so we can put our system into the bunker? Or is there empty bunker space that you're taking?
Yeah. And it's both.
Okay.
And cause what happens, and maybe it's worth just a real quick click into the sort of the existing market. But there are about, you know, think of it roughly speaking, there are about 2,000 cancer centers in the United States, a little bit more than that. There are about 4,000 of these machines, radiation therapy machines in the United States, about three times that worldwide. And they tend to last about 10 years. And after 10 years, a cancer center or a system, a network, is going to replace those machines. Because as we all know, cancer incidence is on the rise. As we all live longer, there are more and more cancer patients every year. So even though we're more successful at treating early stage cancer, that's being offset, unfortunately, in many ways, by a population that is aging and has more incidence of cancer every year. So, you know, a cancer network will replace these machines, right? And so what we are able to do is to go into a department and say, well, look, you're going to replace this machine, rather than getting one, you know, from, you know, the big incumbents that have been around forever. And that, yes, that's the safe play. And we all understand that. Get a machine like ours, which has two modes of use. One is backward compatible using image guidance. And even there, we have breakthrough capabilities that no other machine has. And we've done more than 10,000 of those treatments already. We are a workhorse. The machine is rock solid. You can do that and you'll treat all the patients you're already treating. Get that while you develop a Syntix therapy line for late stage patients that you can kind of ease into. You think of it as a two-for-one, which has a lot to do with sort of de-risking the value proposition for a cancer center that's going to make a large capital purchase. You know, they need to get that right. They need to have a company that's dedicated and understands the service needs and the uptime needs and all of that sort of thing. And we do. And so we sell to those departments replacing machines, Tom, and we also sell to departments that, you know, are consolidating, right? Because that's happening a lot in cancer care and healthcare more broadly. Small practices are being sort of merged into larger, you know, healthcare networks, and they build a new cancer center across town with four new bunkers. And then we put in one of our machines into one of those bunkers as well. So, well, I think we're seeing sort of all of that, right?
Are you selling or leasing or both?
We sell our equipment. And then oftentimes what will happen is a healthcare network will get the capital together for that either through a leasing agency, or they'll just pay for it outright up front. But we also offer an opportunity to decrease the upfront purchase price of our machine substantially, and then to make that up through a Syntix therapy fee, which is a percentage of the collections that a department will receive as they turn on the beam and you know, are reimbursed for that therapy. While we're talking about that, I should also mention that because of the unique approach and novel nature of our machine, which has received breakthrough device designation from the FDA for cancer in the lung, as a result of the de novo and the clinical study that we use to clear Syntix biology guided radiation therapy. It's the only machine out there with that novel clearance. We were able to get breakthrough device reimbursement as well, which is double the reimbursement of conventional radiation therapy.
Oh, interesting.
But all of that sort of rolls together into a clinical, an operational, and a financial package that makes sense for cancer therapy departments, right? Because, you know, independent of us, we're not the ones out there saying, wouldn't it be interesting to get radiation to late stage patients for the first time? Mm-hmm. The field is trying to do that, right? The field is recognizing, look, this, you know, radiation therapy works beautifully in an early stage setting, but late stage patients need better options, right? We spend 20 times the amount of capital and energy, resources, expenses on late stage patients for far poorer clinical results, right? And so what can we do there, right? And the field is guiding itself to realize that if we can just debulk the patient of gross disease so that these systemic therapies can do better, everybody's going to win there. And so departments are looking for ways to do that. And we believe, and I think our clinical partners believe, that we're the first machine that can bring together a conversation and be at the center of a conversation, a clinical conversation not just with radiation oncologists, but with radiation oncologists, medical oncologists, and nuclear medicine all coming together in a combination therapy setting. And you know, radiation therapy has just historically not really been able to participate in those discussions. So it feels like the entire field is moving, and a machine like this can support a clinical discussion there that is relevant and important.
So I want to continue following this, but I'm just, when someone is a, and it obviously will vary from patient to patient, but a late stage patient goes through your system and you're identifying the areas that need to be treated. Is it typically one spot, two spots, three spots, 10 spots? I mean, again, it can vary from patient to patient, but what are you really looking at? Like,
it's a great question, and it's central to the opportunity for patients, right? It's central to the opportunity for patients. It's central to the opportunity for this platform, the X1 machine from Reflection. The answer to your question is it's changing, right? Right. So forever, you know, for decades, radiation therapy has really been just like surgery, that early stage weapon, right? And a great early stage weapon, which by definition meant you were going after one or perhaps two targets, bulky targets, close together, mm-hmm. single spot, hasn't spread yet, right? And that's great. And that remains the practice every day, all around the world. But, you know, just like what happened with cancer in the brain, with great devices like the Gamma Knife, where, you know, we started to realize, look, you know, let's, just because it's spread, if we have a technology that'll let us go after multiple sites of disease, let's do that. And those patients are probably going to do better. And in fact, they've now been proven to do better. Right? And so it wasn't that many years ago that if a patient had multiple brain lesions, we treated the entire brain, which had huge side effects, as you might expect. And that's just not the case now. And so with devices like the Gamma Knife, which have superior technology and precision and ability to zero in precisely on multiple targets, mm-hmm. part of that is supported because targets in your skull don't move and the brain can be held very, 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 very still because the skull can be held very, very still, which is not the case through the rest of the body. But because of those technologies and opportunities, it's now routine that 10 or 12 metastatic sites of disease are treated in a single session in the brain. Wow. Right? And then those patients will go away and come back 6-8 months later with multiple sites of disease and they'll treat them again. And those patients do really well compared to how they would have done otherwise. And that same sort of track is being now explored and followed through the clinical studies I mentioned a moment ago that show that if I can just treat multiple sites of disease through the body, even though they're a late stage patient, those patients will do well. And in fact, if you dive into the details of some of those studies, Tom, you'll see that many of those were open to patients with 4 or 5 sites of disease, meaning they had metastatic cancer. There were 4 or 5 lesions throughout the lung or liver, what have you. And if you look at the actual number of lesions targeted, even in those clinical studies, it was fewer than 2. And they still had 2-year improvement in overall survival. Right. So the thesis that, you know, one I think can rationally draw from that is that, look, if I can get to 4, 5, 6 sites of disease following that same path that we did with the brain, those patients are going to do even better. And so the entire field is embroiled in a conversation about how to do that. And again, it's not just radiation oncologists, it's medical oncologists who are referring those patients to radiation oncology. And those medical oncologists are saying, well, look, if you have a technology that has a chance at treating 4, 5, 6 sites of disease, and I realize it's going to take some time to get there, but you have a fundamental capability that will unlock that potential, I'll refer those patients to you. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that's a conversation now we are starting to have with our clinical partners. And then the nuclear medicine people are coming to the table and saying, well, look, let's look at the same targeting mechanism with the hottest thing in cancer care right now, which are targeted therapies. Right. So radiopharmaceuticals are all the talk now. And I think appropriately and very interestingly. And, you know, again, why is that? Well, because they're taking radiation, which we understand very, very well in terms of its toxicity and benefit, And they're using a targeting mechanism that we use too, right? It's the same targeting mechanism that we use, but rather than attaching the radioactive payload to that targeting mechanism and letting it get where it needs to go through that targeting mechanism, we light up the cancer and then shoot at it from the outside. And we think that kind of gives us the best of both worlds. It gives us the same targeting mechanism of a radiopharmaceutical, but it also gives us the ability to discriminate how much dose we want to go and where. And you know, ultimately, even radiopharmaceuticals, when all the promise they have, they're still limited by the same thing that limits all drugs, right? All drugs depend on the vascular highway of the body to get the drug where it needs to go, including into cancerous tumors. And cancerous tumors don't have great vascularization. It's uneven. They're not well organized. And so, you know, half of the tumor will get the drug, the other half won't get the drug because the vascularization is inefficient. And we don't need that, right? We don't need the whole tumor to light up. If one spot on the tumor lights up, that's good enough for us because we light up one spot, but we can draw an area around it that is targeted by our machine and guarantee that we'll hit that, again, independent of its motion and with no a priori knowledge of its motion.
Very interesting. I could keep going on and on. So many questions to ask, but let's just conclude with an idea of where you think this is headed, both the Syntex system, but also Reflection. I mean, you raised over $100 million last year. You've got a few names in there that, you know, you could identify as perhaps pre-IPO type of investors. Do you have a sense of where Reflection will be in a couple of years, both in terms of a corporate entity, but also where it'll be out there in the healthcare world? Are you looking at, and this is a different question, are you going to be primarily an ASC sort of cancer center kind of situations, more in clinical settings? What do the next couple of years look like for Reflection?
Yeah, thanks, Tom. I appreciate, sort of the broad brush question because I think you're right to ask about it that way. You touched on a couple of important things. Let me hit a couple of them here. The first one is in terms of sort of like, who does this appeal to, right? And is it academics? Is it community cancer centers? And we designed this machine from the ground up to be equally applicable everywhere, right? And I think our backlog, we've sold a lot of these machines. We're selling a lot of these machines. And, you know, approaching two-thirds of our backlog, believe it or not, are community cancer centers, even including single vault centers. And those are the types of machines that we're starting to install now, but I'm going to come back to that in a minute. But and we built the machine from its size and footprint and sort of overall workflow to ensure that metastatic disease could be attacked at the community level, right? I mean, that's metastatic disease kills 600,000 patients a year in the United States alone. And, you know, those 600,000 patients need to be treated in their hometowns, right? So we want a community-based solution, and we are resonating on that level. Having said that, we're also trying to change the field, right? We're trying to take radiation therapy to a new cohort of patients, generally speaking, beyond its reach. And you're not going to do that without clinical evidence and amazing partners at the academic level as well. Is right. So, because you need both. And we've got those partners today. We're installing more of them, every quarter. And we couldn't do it without their vision and support. And this company will fuel that advancement, right? So all of our investors have joined this company, not just to take on a technological enterprise, but to take on a clinical opportunity as well, which means we're going to fund clinical studies that aren't necessarily the kind of studies we've already done to get clearance. We'll keep doing those too as we onboard additional indications and additional tracers that specifically in a bespoke manner highlight different indications in a very, very nice and efficient way. But we'll do that to drive adoption, right? So remember those studies I mentioned a few minutes ago that show, and they were early kind of signal studies, you pressing the existing technology as far as it could go to say, well, what if we can get radiation to multiple sites of disease alongside a systemic therapy? Well, we're going to run those studies. And in fact, we already have partnerships with Merck and others to drive those studies in the practice. You know, those are going to be big and expensive studies. That this is a company that will continue to need capital to support changing the standard of care. But we believe that it, that you know, as a natural byproduct of the fact that the biggest thing holding back radiation therapy, despite its 100 years of use, is targeting and motion management. Full stop. Targeting and motion management. Every innovation for the last 50 years has been dedicated toward that. And we think we've turned that on its head by making the cancer scream its position in real time constantly to the machine. And so if you just build on that and believe that that will not only allow our machine to do a better job where radiation is used today, but will allow it to leap into the next frontier, that those patients with 4, 5, 6, maybe no limit to the number of tumors that could ultimately be reached by a machine with this fundamental capability, you're going to need evidence to show that is safe and effective and works well and has all the benefits we would sort of naturally intuit that it has. And we're going to, you know, continue to build a company that is partnered both clinically and from an investor perspective to support that. We believe fundamentally that that's a public company, and are setting ourselves up to take advantage of that when markets are ready, and that we'll be ready to.
Do you, are your backlog from community centers, I'm curious, are you seeing a lot of interest from rural, sort of less traditional settings? That would seem to be a way to get care out to people who maybe don't have access to it right now.
That's absolutely the case. And I think there are both clinical and sort of financial ways, and we mentioned some of those earlier about how we ensure that a machine like this is practical and can make sense and can draft into that existing infrastructure without, you know, just being overwhelming. And I think we built a machine that can do that. So we're absolutely seeing that. But part of that comes back to the fundamental way the machine works, right? And it's autonomous radiation therapy, and it's the first version of autonomous radiation therapy. That target that I mentioned earlier in our call, where we were able to shrink wrap the dose around the moving target by 30%. Again, that happened autonomously without any human intervention. We've seen in our early cases where there are shifts that happen, even from a patient that the department thought was entirely immobilized, 1 centimeter target that shifted, you know, without any knowledge that it was going to do so and didn't realize that it had shifted by a centimeter until after the therapy, and any other machine in the world would have missed it. Completely missed it, and they would have never even known that it happened. But the X1 automatically and autonomously detected that and accounted for it without any intervention whatsoever. And because of that fundamental capability, that's what a community cancer center wants too, right? I mean, a community cancer says, well, look, I don't necessarily have the full staff of physicists and dosimetrists that I can surround this machine with and radiation oncologists. You know, I want the same great care, but you know, if there's a way to do it through automation and an autonomous self-guided machine that reduces my labor burden so I can see more patients with, you know, kind of world-class quality, well, of course they want that if the operational and financial picture makes sense too. And we think we've done that too.
Right. I could start talking about AI and remote capabilities and all the other cool stuff, but I think we've covered a lot of ground. I have to save something for the next interview. Todd, this has been a really interesting visit. Thank you for joining us on the podcast.
I've really enjoyed it, Tom, and would look forward to chatting further at any time.
All right, well, that is a wrap. Thanks so much for joining us on this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. Once again, drop a dime. Let us know where we're dropping the ball, what we can do better. Connect with us on LinkedIn, Kayleen Brown, managing editor, myself, Tom Salemi, Chris Newmarker, if you have some news to share, he's the editor-in-chief of Mass Device. Connect with us all on LinkedIn. And please share this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. Love to get more folks aware of our podcast network, continuing to grow and add new topics. And we want to, we just don't want to stop. So we appreciate your help with that. Join us for Device Talks Tuesdays on Tuesday at 4 p.m. And of course, register for Device Talks West, which is happening on October 16th and 17th at the Santa Clara Convention Center. All right, that's it, folks. Thanks so much for being part of Device Talks, and enjoy the rest of your day, and we'll talk to you next week.